Yeah, I guess so.
The Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development will be in order. I'd like to note that we have a quorum, and it is present. We have a busy schedule today, folks. I'd like to get started. First up is Senate File 619 and Senator Franson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to present to the committee Senate File 619 for your consideration regarding unemployment insurance temporary tax reduction. Currently, the unemployment insurance tax fund balance is above the recommended solvency level and growing, which is great news. This proposal provides businesses a decrease in the amount of state unemployment insurance taxes they pay. Senate File 619 provides a mechanism for reducing the unemployment insurance tax rates for employers for calendar years 2014 and 2015 by reducing the base rate component of the tax. Specifically, the bill would lower the base rate to 0.1% provided the balance is met in the trust fund in 2014 and 2015 as outlined in the legislation. If the trust fund has sufficient funds balance in 2014 and 15, Deed estimates it would save businesses approximately $346.5 million over both years. To go over more detail in the legislation, I have with me Mr. Rick Caliguri with Unemployment Insurance, Director of Unemployment Insurance for Deed.
Well, thank you, sir. If you could state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Rick Caliguri, and I'm Director of Unemployment Insurance at the Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, the Minnesota unemployment insurance tax system is a system of laws that generate the revenue to pay for what is called standard unemployment insurance that each state operates. The revenue comes from employers paying a payroll tax. It goes into a trust fund in Washington. Each state has an individual trust fund. Minnesota's system is structured such that we tax employers low during the good times. And then when tough economic times happen, like the last Great Recession, there are triggers and mechanisms to raise additional revenue. During the Great Recession, 36 states ended up borrowing from the state, from the federal government, and Minnesota was one of those states. And in fact, our mechanisms then kicked in, generating further tax revenue to pay our way out and back into solvency for our state's trust fund. These mechanisms worked very, very well. So basically the way the taxes work, there are base tax rates. Then on top of that, there are experience ratings, and that's mandated by federal law so that the employers who lay off the most pay a higher tax. And then there's a special assessment that kicked in during the recession that basically goes up to 14% of taxes paid. So all of these mechanisms kicked in. We paid our way out of debt. We came out of debt on April 30th of last year. And by the way, half the states are still in debt. So Minnesota is looked at as a model as far as how well our system worked. And there are triggers that would trigger these taxes back down. But this would happen incrementally over the next 3 years. And our recovery has been so robust, and the fund is recovering at such an extent that it would be fine to go in with session law and turn the special assessment off and the base tax rate down to the minimum rate. So this works quite well, and we still project our trust fund to hit $1 billion, and it's never been at that level before. So we believe that that is a very healthy level of solvency for the UI trust fund. And just to translate what this means to businesses, in 2014, the average Minnesota business would see a tax savings of approximately $156 per employee. And then the employers that are experience rated, so if you were at the minimum experience rating, you're an employer who doesn't lay off, and you're at a zero experience rating, it would average to about $134 per employee. And for those employers who are at the maximum experience rating, construction companies, et cetera, their average tax cut would be $474 per employee in 2014.
Right. Well, thank you, Mr. Caliguri. So, Senator France, I understand you have a technical amendment.
I do.
Would you like to offer that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment would be A1. It's a technical change.
Thank you. Would you like counsel to explain that? Very good. Mr. Fuller, please.
Mr. Chairman, members, if you look at the bill, you'll notice it's uncodified, so there's no context to any references. So what the amendment does on page 1, line 9 and 12, it further defines what an additional assessment is. So that's clear it's the one that's in the rate section of the statute, the unemployment insurance rate. And the second aspect on line 3 of the amendment is just to strike the sense that the bill speaks for itself, and it self-terminates, and it should be in effect forever for those 2 years if somebody has to go back and recalculate a rate. So we don't need a sunset. The bill sunsets on its own terms.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Senator Franson, if you don't have anything further to add, Senator Sparks would move the A1 amendment. There's no discussion on that. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed? And the amendment's adopted. All right. Senator Franson, do you have anything further to say or any additional testimony?
I think we have some testimony in favor of the bill, but I would like to add that my background is I work for a national retailer, and I know for a fact that this is an issue in other states, and we're very lucky in Minnesota that we're at this point where we have a solvent trust fund, and it does mean a lot of dollars and cents for business to be able to reinvest that in their business and hopefully grow more jobs here in Minnesota. Well, I strongly encourage you to support this bill.
Well, thank you, Senator Franson. I have two testifiers on our list here, Ben Gerber from the Chamber and also Mr. Hickey, if you're available, if you'd like to offer your testimony. Hello, Mr. Gerber. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ben Gerber. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're an organization of 2,400 businesses around the state, both large and small. I'd like to thank Senator Franzen for introducing this bill. It provides some welcome relief for businesses, both large and small, around the state. I think it's really important. We've seen a lot of bills that we believe have increased costs, and I think this is one way where the state is really moving forward and reducing some of the burdens on businesses around the state. So I'd like to say thank you, and thank you, Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Members, Mike Hickey, the National Federation of Independent Business. We have 13,000 members across the state, and just wanted to briefly thank Senator Franzen for bringing this forward. I think it's impressive that Minnesota right now is going to have a minimum rate, I believe, of 0.1, and that's about as low as you can get, I believe. And so I appreciate this legislation and moving that tax rate down. We have a lot of members at the minimum rate, but this will provide relief for all employers. The minimum rate people don't contribute to the problem at all. They only pay. And so suspending the surtax and bumping the minimum rate down, those two done in concert together, will be very helpful.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. Anyone else like to speak for or against the bill at this point? Members, any questions regarding Senate File 619? Any questions? Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate File 619 as amended be recommended to pass.
All right, and I think our next stop is to finance. Is there any discussion on that motion? Otherwise, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed, nay. And the bill is passed. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Franson.
Thank you, committee members.
All right. We have up next Senate File 602 from Senator Dietzick. Is she in the room? Great. Hello, Senator Dietzick.
Oh, good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. Senate File 602 deals with workers' ability to collect money owed to them from an employment relationship. It clarifies rights and responsibilities. I have with me here to discuss the bill is Justin Cummins, past officer and current member of the National Employment Lawyers Association, Minnesota chapter.
Well, sir, if you could state your name for the record, please.
Sure. Good afternoon. Justin Cummins.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Just very briefly, these amendments are set out to clarify some confusion that was caused by a recent decision by the Minnesota Supreme Court. And in sum, this law was established by the legislature nearly a century ago to enable employees to recover unpaid wages that they've earned. And there's been some confusion as a result of a recent decision by the Supreme Court, call this the Affordable Granite. This law is simply clarifying the legislative intent, which is that workers can get the wages that they've earned but remain unpaid. This is something that is of benefit both to the labor community and to the business community because it provides certainty, provides clarity.
Thank you, Mr. Cummins. Yes, Senator.
I have two amendments. There is the A13 amendment.
All right. Senator Dietzick offers the A13 amendment.
Yes. Do one of you have to offer it?
Oh, pardon me?
I think one of you have to offer the amendment.
Yes. Senator Sparks moves that
Thank
we
you.
Offer the A13 amendment.
This amendment actually will put it into the form that the House has the bill in. So it actually syncs it up with the House.
Okay, thank you.
And we've had discussions with both the Labor and the Chamber, and I believe everybody is on board with these amendments. And if Mr. Gerber is here still, he can attest to that.
All right. Mr. Gerber, do you like to speak on the bill? He may have left the room.
Might have.
Oh, here we go. And, sir, once again, if you could state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ben Gerber.
Welcome again.
Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate Senator Dietzick has worked with us and appreciated that she addressed some of our original concerns with how the bill read. So we do appreciate it, and I think we're neutral on the bill, but greatly appreciate the work that's been done.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. So we have the A13 amendment. If there's no discussion, Senator Sparks moves adoption of the A13 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. And the amendment is adopted.
Okay, and then there's the I have an additional amendment that was language that Senate Counsel suggested, so I would like to get that added in, too, and that's the A1 amendment.
All right, Senator Sparks offers the A1 amendment. We'll have this passed out. Please, Senator, proceed.
So, again, it just clarifies some of the rights and responsibilities. A worker feels that they were, especially, and a lot of this is day labor or somebody that's on a project, and so if they feel they were not paid the amount they were supposed to be paid, that does require them in writing to request their payment, and then it sets out a procedure for everybody to follow, and it clarifies what everybody needs to do to resolve the situation. So I ask for your support of the bill.
All right, if there's no. Okay, so we have the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion on that? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. Amendment A1 is adopted. All right. Senator Dietzick, anything more to offer at this point or any additional testimony? Otherwise, I'd open this up for questions from committee members. With no additional discussion, Senator Sparks moves that we pass Senate File 602 and send it to Judiciary.
Correct.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. And the motion prevails.
Thank you.
Right, thank you, Senator Dietzick. Up next, we have Senate File 641 from Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, to present Senate File 641. I know that we had a 2.5-hour meeting the other day dealing with minimum wage, and I appreciate members' attendance and careful and thoughtful attention that was brought forward that day. Today, Senate File 641 is the Department of Labor and Industry is requesting that Minnesota Legislature amend the Minnesota Fair Labor Standards Act to bring Minnesota into compliance with standards established by the federal labor law to create uniformity and to help achieve wage payment compliance. The bill would increase the Minnesota minimum wage to at least the federal minimum wage, currently at $7.25, for all Minnesota workers, while preserving Minnesota's training wage and other Minnesota exclusions and prohibitions. This would bring us, like I said, into compliance with the federal rates. It would bring us up to our neighboring states' minimum wage standards. And I don't know how much more detail we want to go in. There are some other sections of the bill, but I believe with amendments we might deal with them, Mr. Chair and members.
All right. Well, thank you, Senator Sparks. Is there any discussion on the bill, any testimony at this point? Members, any questions? All right. We'll seeing no questions, I think there's a motion. Senator Coonan.
Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment to offer to this bill. It's the A1 amendment.
All right.
I don't know if it's been distributed yet. Or
Senator Coonan offers the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Coonan.
What this amendment does is delete on page 3, deletes section 3.
I think everyone has a copy now. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Senator Coonan, I want to thank you for bringing this amendment forward. We've heard some discussion on this. This was dealing with overtime restriction, and we've heard some concern about this section of the bill, and I would consider this a friendly amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Sparks. Senator
Mr.
Dames.
Chair, would we not also have to change the language on 1.12, page 1, is number 2 there refers to agriculture? And if we're removing that section 3, wouldn't we also be changing line 1.13? Putting the 48 hours in, striking 40?
Just delete section 1.
Or just delete section 1?
Thank you, Senator Dames. We'll confer with counsel on this. Mr. Fuller, do you mind offering some counsel here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, there's actually 3 provisions in the bill that refer to 48 to 40. The one in section 1 is really the 48 to 40 is not an overtime requirement, but it's how you define an employee. If you look up at line 1.8, employee means any individual employed by an employer, but does not include, and then if you go down to 1.12, any individual employed in agriculture on a farming unit operation who is paid a salary greater than the individual would be paid if the individual worked 40 hours, and 48, now it's 40 at the state minimum wage. So let's see, how would that play out? So we're accepting people. This is a definition of an exception from the Fair Labor Standards Act, minimum wage and overtime.
Right.
And so this would require less of a payment to them, so it would expand the number of people who are agricultural employees who would be subject to it. So the answer to your question is, no, it's not necessary to remove it. It's the same sort of thing as is section 4. But they can stand on their own, each one.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller.
But
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, I still have a question on that. Number 2 says, and help me out here, Mr. Fuller, because I'm probably just missing it, but it says, any individual employed in agriculture on a farming unit or operation who is paid a salary greater than the individual would be paid if the individual worked 40 hours at a state minimum wage, 17 ounce hours at 1.5 times. So we would they would be required to start paying after 40 hours. Is that not correct?
Mr. Fuller.
Instead of
48? Mr. Chairman, Senator Dames, that's not correct. It's just it's part of a calculation to see whether or not that person is exempt as an employee under the Act, and that exemption depends on how much they're paid. When you lower the number of hours that I work times minimum wage, you decrease the amount of money that individual would have to be paid to be considered exempt. Okay. But it does not govern how much overtime they should be paid.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller.
Thank you.
Yeah, Senator Coonan.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fuller, so that would actually, in my layman's way of saying it, lower the bar, make more people eligible. Then. Is that, am I interpreting that correct?
Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coonan, yes.
Any additional discussion on the A1 amendment? I'd reiterate, Senator Sparks, you view this as a friendly amendment? All right. Well, seeing no further discussion on the A1 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed, nay. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me if we can interrupt. We do have some testimony here, if I could allow for this. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Ken Peterson, Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, members, Senator Sparks, we just saw this amendment, and I don't quite understand all the implications of it, but if it is what it appears to be, basically taking the federal conformity away from it, the 40-hour federal conformity, putting it back to 48. We oppose it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. All right. Forgive me, members.
We encourage members to vote against it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Any additional testimony regarding the A1 amendment? All right. Seeing none, no additional discussion among the committee? All right. Once again, here, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 And all those opposed, say nay. All right. The amendment is adopted. Right. Senator Sparks?
Mr. Chair, that's all I have. I don't know if there's other amendments that would like to be offered.
All right. Any other discussion among the committee? All right. Well, seeing none, we have a motion from Senator Coonan to move Senate file. I'm sorry, Senator Sparks, do you have anything additional to say?
Mr. Chair, no. I would move that Senate file 641 as amended be recommended to pass.
All right. Well, thank you, Senator Sparks. With no additional discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. And the bill, Senate file 642 as amended, passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Where does this go, Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry. This bill is actually moved to the floor. So this heads to the floor. Okay. Senator Eaton is not available right now for Senate File 3, so we're going to move on to Senate File 1057. Is Senator Dietzick still in the room? Right. Dan, you want to come back?
Senator Dietzick, thank you. Senator Dietzick, Senate File 1057. Thank you, members. I know it's a busy time and people are bumping between committees, so thank you for being flexible. Senator Dietzick, Senate File 1057.
Thank you, members. I have Senate File 1057, which is Governor Dayton's job and economic bill. I have with me today is Department of Labor and Industry Commissioner Ken Peterson. Deed Commissioner Clark was not able to attend, but I have several people from her department here with me, including Ken Babine, Kim Babine, Legislative Affairs, Kevin McKinnon, who is the Director of Business and Community Development, and the Trade Office at Dieter. So Minnesota's job growth in 2012 was the 12th best among 50 states. We outperformed Iowa, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Only North Dakota did better than us in the upper Midwest, and they led the nation. Our economy is improving, but we can do better. We need to be competitive, and this bill provides some additional effective tools to help us attract businesses, retain jobs, and compete in the 21st century global economy. This bill increases funding for the Minnesota Investment Fund, it establishes a Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and supports a global competitiveness initiative. It also streamlines some construction inspections and reduces the unemployment insurance tax for employers, which was Senator Franson's bill that you heard earlier. You should have handouts in your packet describing the big change items, but I'll give a short summary. In this bill, there's $30 million for the Minnesota Investment Fund. Many states offer huge incentives to attract jobs in their state. Minnesota offers only modest incentives. So this bill will increase funding for the Minnesota Investment Fund that provides financing to create and retain quality jobs. It helps encourage local firms that have options outside the state to expand here and provides incentives for firms outside Minnesota to locate to our state. It provides $25 million for the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and this fund will provide additional funding with targeted strategic incentives to retain and attract jobs. It replaces the Job Z program. It's more transparent and accountable. These two funds will help level the playing field and help keep and attract jobs in our communities. The bill also includes $1.5 million for a global competitiveness initiative. This initiative will establish three new trade offices in foreign markets. 37 states have overseas trade offices. We have one in Shanghai, and we have seen a 71% increase in exports to China since we opened that office. This initiative will also help qualifying small businesses participate in trade activities by offering financial and technical assistance and communicate the benefits of doing business in Minnesota. The bill will give $20 million for a transportation economic development program, and this is a collaborative between DEED and MnDOT to leverage local and private investment in infrastructure, improving access to industrial parks and office parks, manufacturing facilities, and other regional employment centers. It gives $10 million for a housing and job growth initiative. Business expansion efforts are sometimes hampered by a lack of available housing, especially in Greater Minnesota. This initiative will help communities and employers address the issue by encouraging private partnerships to increase affordable housing. This program will help and help retain and attract employees to the area. It also provides assistance to help ex-offenders pay for housing to help them find stable employment and reduce recidivism, and stabilize housing for families with young kids who tend to move around a lot during the school year. And as I said earlier, it will accelerate the decrease in the base unemployment tax rate, saving Minnesota employers more money to help invest in their businesses and our economy. The bill increases fees on rental car to generate revenue to pay expanded marketing activities for Explore Minnesota Tourism. It provides money for additional staff for the Bureau of Mediation Services to handle labor disputes and provide funding to update their computer systems. The bill also adds a staff person to DALI to focus on child labor law compliance. Right now, approximately 100 children suffer serious work injuries, and this bill will fund a person to help educate employers. It also increases fees on the combative sports to improve safety and ensure that the Office of Combative Sports is self-sustaining. The Combative Sports Advisory Panel gave input into these fees. The bill restructures plumbing fees so fees are aligned with expenses. It removes a cap, and it removes the accelerated review plan. The accelerated review plan is no longer needed because all plans will be reviewed in 15 days, working days. It removes a cap on elevator inspections so fees match costs, and it adjusts fees for wind farm inspections so they take advantage of economy of scale. And last but not least, this bill repeals the Minnesota Science Technology Authority. So everyone involved in this effort thought it was a great idea, but it was not funded properly, and other entities in the area have made similar efforts to improve jobs in that area. So now I will let Commissioner Peterson say a few words.
Commissioner Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Ken Peterson, Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. Members, I encourage you to support the bill. In my department, we have several good things in there that we think will help our inspections, our regulatory system work better. And also, as you heard from Senator Dietzick, there's a lot of good stuff from the department, from DEED, that will help our economy continue to move forward and grow, as we've heard already today, that it's growing well. So I encourage you to support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. And I know Commissioner Clark Sieben, I think, feels the same way. This is an important bill. Do members have any questions for Senator Dietzick on Senate File 1057? Would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 1057? If not, Senator Schmidt would move that Senate File 1057 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator
Dietzick.
Thank you. Dietzick. Senator Eaton is presenting a bill on another committee, so we'll move to Senator Schmidt, Senate File 1128.
Well, thank you, Senator Sparks and committee.
I do
have the A3 amendment I'd like to offer. Senator Schmidt, the A3 amendment is a delete-all amendment, the author's amendment. That's right.
This is the amendment you'd like to get the bill in the shape the author would prefer?
That's right.
Okay. Members, do you have a copy of the A3 amendment? It should be coming around now.
And this amendment includes a number of technical changes and cleans up some language, so not a full departure from what was originally introduced. Nonetheless, enough to merit a delete-all here. So I'd like to offer the A3 and move it for adoption.
All right.
Any discussion on the A3 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would prefer? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. Senator Schmidt, two-year bill, Senate file 1128.
All right. Well, thank you, Senator Sparks and committee. This bill builds on a lot of activity in the realm of broadband over the last several years. We've had a couple of task forces, gubernatorial task forces, that have looked into the issue of broadband development in Minnesota. And this is specifically an answer to a specific recommendation from the last or the current broadband task force for creating an Office of Broadband Development in Minnesota. This legislation would establish an Office of Broadband to improve, foster, and encourage broadband expansion, to promote job growth and increase services to areas without or having limited broadband services in Minnesota. The Office of Broadband Development would be a gubernatorial appointment office, and it would be interagency, working among transportation and deed and commerce and others. The office shall produce a report to make recommendations on expanding broadband in Minnesota. And the office will be a central planning body for the state and will coordinate efforts by various entities to develop a broadband network in Minnesota. It will also measure its potential economic impacts of broadband infrastructure in Minnesota. The office will be required to provide regular reports to the legislature and coordinate activity. That's a general overview here. We have in section one here, we have the creation of the Office of Broadband Development. And a number of reporting requirements. Essentially, what we're doing is we're answering the governor's challenge to create an Office of Broadband in Minnesota, and we're providing some clarity in terms of what we'd like them to do. In Section 2 and 3, we call for annual reports on the state of progress in broadband in Minnesota, and then there is, Mr. Chair, an appropriation for funding the Office of Broadband activity in Minnesota in the next 2 years. So with that said, I would, would welcome some additional testimony. We have, chairwoman of the task force, Ms. Anderson.
Before we get there, Senator Root has a question. Senator Root.
Mr. Chair, Senator Schmidt, could you just kind of give us maybe a highlight of the difference between your bill and your delete all?
Oh, sure. Oh,
Senator Schmidt.
You know, what we've done here essentially is we've offered some clarity on the duties of the Office of Broadband, and what we've done is we've removed a provision for the Department of Transportation to produce a dig once policy. So we've essentially tasked the Office of Broadband for developing that dig once approach. Otherwise, it's very much unchanged and just some technical cleanup language.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Ms. Anderson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Margaret Anderson Kelleher. I am the chair of the Governor's Broadband Task Force, as well as the president and CEO of the Minnesota High Tech Association. I'm pleased to be before you today to support the Office of Broadband Development. This was one of the major items in the task force's report of December 2012 that we felt very strongly about recommending to the governor, and we also had hopes that the legislature would listen to the recommendations as well. This is one piece that the governor did recommend in his budget, is the development of an Office of Broadband. And so the committee members, the task force members, who are all volunteers, are very supportive of this work. The reason why it is needed, and I think, you know, it's often why are we doing this, and why it's needed is that the coordination across different agencies in this area is critically important for us to move forward. There are legislative statute-based goals for broadband to be available to all Minnesotans by 2015. In our December report, we do say that without more attention and intervention by policymakers, that it is very likely we won't make that goal. We are slowly climbing towards that goal, but it is a slow climb. And particularly rural Minnesota is affected by the slow climb towards both access and adoption of broadband. And so as a task force, this is one of our major recommendations. We were pleased the governor included it in his budget. And I am here today to support Senator Schmidt in his continued work to improve upon an idea that was in its early stage when the task force recommended it.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson Kelleher. I know that you've done a lot of hard work, you and the group. Senator Schmidt, do you know, I know there was some discussion in the past about whether the Department of Employment or Economic Development or the Department of Commerce would be the agency of jurisdiction. Do we define that within your bill?
You know, Senator Sparks, we do not. What we're asking for here is that this office be headed by a gubernatorial appointee, not unlike the Office of Tourism in Minnesota, and that it be multi-agency in focus. I think what we've realized over time is that broadband touches a lot of different areas of our lives, and similarly, it touches a lot of different departments and agencies within state government. I don't think at this time we're in a position to say there's a perfect fit for it to be housed. It traditionally has been an activity that's overseen by the Department of Commerce. However, I think it's a great tool for economic development, especially in rural Minnesota. So I definitely see opportunities with working with DEED. And similarly, we're challenging or asking the office to look into a dig once policy in working with transportation. My view is that broadband and fiber is an essential 21st century infrastructure, and there's a lot of analogies and comparisons to traditional infrastructure with roads and bridges. I think there's also applications with health and the Office of Enterprise Technology as well. So what we're trying to do is elevate this topic and really focus on the multi-agency aspects of broadband in Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Schmidt. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators. My name is Dennis Ehlers. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Commerce and where the current office is housed. And we work closely and provide support for the Broadband Task Force. I just wanted to say we do support this effort by the Senator to promote broadband in the state and to promote the Governor's proposal for an Office of Broadband Development. As you mentioned, it was in the original bill was to be housed in the Department of Commerce, and we did speak with the senator yesterday in which he mentioned this idea of an independent office, and we're willing to work with the senator and the other agencies involved and the governor's office to make this work and however we can do that.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Schmidt, then if we put this, if it becomes law, would this go on? Do we have any sunset clause on this like we do with the goals of the Broadband Task Force, or would this then be an ongoing office that would be fully funded moving forward?
Senator Sparks, this bill calls for a two-year appropriation. So in years 2014-2015, as was called for in the governor's budget, you know, my personal view is this is an essential activity for the state and for economic competitiveness and job growth in rural Minnesota in particular. My view is that this activity should be ongoing, and that's why we do not have a sunset clause in here. I'd like to get this operation up and running here in the next 2 years and start the conversation. And I think that we'll have ample time down the road to evaluate it and to tweak it if need be.
Senator Schmidt, I agree with you. I think that it's important that we get this moving forward. But hopefully, if Ms. Anderson Kelleher and the rest of their group get to that 100% level, then maybe we won't have to have this going on forever. But, I mean, I think the goals are fine. I just wanted to ask a question.
Well, Senator Sparks, I'd agree. I think we'd all like to achieve those goals. So I think this would go a long ways in getting us there and filling the gap.
So, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do recall, I believe, the overview about our state's broadband situation now, and I believe we had discussion in this committee about the state's broadband goals and the fact that it appears that the current state broadband goal does not take into account mobile use and mobile internet use, which is a growing aspect. So, Ms. Kelleher Anderson, can you kind of refresh my memory about the report that I think came before this committee earlier this session and the state's broadband goal, and how is the increasing use of mobile reflected in that goal?
Ms. Anderson Kelleher?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson and committee members, right now I think the traditional definition of broadband, we always say in the task force, we are inclusive and agnostic about the technology that would get us to the goal. So we have included in our work the studying of wireless as a technology that can get us there. The good news about wireless is that it does help us move faster towards getting to that full goal of the megabit measurement that we have in state statute. However, even if we would include wireless today, we would not be fully at the goal. And so we're exploring that right now of how to account for the use of wireless. And the other issues with wireless, of course, no matter what we do, and I think we had this discussion when we did the overview, we need to have the backbone in place because wireless works when it has a fiber or hardwire connection. And so that's why it is still important to focus on this, even if we believe that in the next 10 to 20 years, we will get there through wireless, fiber, and all sorts of other non-wired technologies. Of course, we have a particular goal, though, and that's to meet the goal by 2015, and that is only 2 years away. So we are most interested in whatever technologies move us quickly that way and serve Minnesotans the best way. So you are correct that in the traditional sense, wireless is often not included, but for the task force's purposes, we have included it in our work and will continue to.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am reassured then to know that mobile is included wireless in the task force report. And my question would be, does the state's broadband goal include, I know you said it, the task force was agnostic to type, but what I want to know specifically is, does the state's broadband goal, as referenced in section 237.012, does that include mobile and wireless?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson, there is no prohibition on wireless being included in this. And so that's why we felt that we could include it as the task force in the definition. I think the challenges, and what you may also be remembering, is that when Connect Minnesota is measuring, they have a definition around fixed wired connection versus wireless. And so this is one, I think this highlights the very issue that we're talking about why coordination across agency and across technology platforms is so important to know where we're at and how we're going to get there for all Minnesotans. I can remind you that Dr. Geller's presentation also said that for younger Minnesotans, for Minnesotans that are in minority populations, that they are actually adopting wireless speeds that are much higher. And so we don't want to exclude in what we're doing. That's the need for the coordination and the expansion beyond just the wired world.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank
That's
you,
the
Senator
comment
Nelson.
I needed to hear. Thank you.
Very good. Yeah, we did have a nice discussion on that. Any further discussion on Senator Schmidt, Senate File 1128? Seeing none, then Senator Schmidt moves that Senate File 1128 as amended be recommended to pass, and I understand this needs to go to state and local government.
That's right, Senator Sparks.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Schmidt. Senator Eaton has arrived. Senate File 3 will now be before the committee. Senator Eaton, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have an A9 amendment.
Okay. Members should be receiving Senator Eaton's A9 amendment. Would you like to discuss the amendment a little bit, Senator Eaton, as it's being passed out?
Mr. Chair, the amendment essentially we have the here. Oh, it basically starts this year at the moving the state minimum wage to 7.25, which is equal to the federal rate right now. And Let's see. I think it's the – this is – all this is excluded from businesses that make less than $625,000 a year. And this will go up incrementally at in 2014 to $750,000 and $775,000 in 2015. This also limits the – I'm looking for language – but it limits the amount that somebody in training gets. And – $490 an hour. See what there was one other piece. And it's under 18, I believe, is set at
Senator Eaton, maybe we'll have council kind of run through this.
That would be awesome.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senate Council. Mr. Chairman, members, I guess the first thing is what's not in the bill. There's not the escalator.
Right.
So that's gone. Starting from the top, so large employers.
Oh, there it is.
Which is more than $625,000, as Senator Eaton said. There is a phased increase starting this fall of $725 from the current rate of $615, and then 25 cents each subsequent year, 2 years, till in 2015 it hits $775. There's no increase in the small employer. And the training wage is raised to $515 an hour on line 23, which can be paid for people under 20 for up to 90 days. That's a federal limit. And then on line 26, there's a special rate. So even if the when the rate steps up for large employers, it will not step up for employees who are under the age of 18. It goes up originally, and then it's not increased further by this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fuller. I know you've been busy. Members, there's discussion on the A9 amendment. Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Eaton, thanks for bringing this forward. I know that it's a little different than your previous bill. I think many of the business community has expressed concern around the automatic escalator, and you listened to that and so took that out, and seems like then as a compromise just went up a little bit in the amount, and so I appreciate that compromise.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonham. Members, further discussion on the A9 amendment. I think what we'll do, if we have a motion, we can put it on, then we'll be working off this document as we move forward with amendments, if that's okay with members. So Senator Schmidt would move the A9 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment the motion prevails. The A9 amendment is adopted. Senator Eaton, anything else to add, or should we?
The last minimum wage increase was in 2005, and we're long overdue.
Okay, members, discussion on Senate File 3 as amended, the A9 amendment. Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, can you we just passed 641, was it, your minimum wage bill?
That's correct.
Yes. And then this is just in addition to. It's somewhere along the line it'll be sorted out, I assume, between one or the other.
That is my understanding, Senator Nelson.
Just checking.
That's right. That's good.
Just checking.
Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair, Senator Eaton, can you just give me kind of the rhyme or reason of why you picked these numbers for the increases? Is there some formula that you used or some reason that you picked those numbers to increase them and to vary from the federal?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The initial 725 is comparable to the federal rate.
Correct.
And then going up by 25 cents seemed to hold the small businesses, or actually the businesses over $625,000, harmless pretty much. They could adjust for that.
Senator Root, I'm sorry.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Eatman, there's really not a formula. It's just kind of an arbitrary number that you used.
Pretty much.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Senator Eaton, Council says that we may need to make a technical change to your A9 amendment. So, Mr. Fuller, maybe you can help us out with that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Eaton, sort of a question and point. If you look at paragraph D on line 26, notwithstanding paragraph B, a large employer must, beginning August 1st, pay each employer under the age of 18 wages at least $7.25 an hour. That overlooked, I think, the training wage in paragraph C, which allows a sub-minimum wage for 90 days. I'm thinking we need to, if that was the intent, and I think it was, to
Mr.
accommodate
Chair,
that with some
correct.
New language. So I would suggest, and should we wait? I can suggest. So at the end of, let's come back to it.
Let's let Council, Senator Eaton, is that your intent, what Mr. Fuller just described?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let's give him a little time to work on that. So, members, we can continue to work off the A9 amendment, if that's okay.
Chair.
Senator Dames.
Senator Dames has offered the A4 amendment.
Okay, members, the A4 amendment should be coming around. Senator Dames, you want to discuss the A4 amendment?
You want to wait till Senator Eaton gets her copy? Thanks, or do you want me to go ahead?
Go ahead and start. She's got it.
What the A4 amendment does is it's a tiered wage situation for our restaurant people. So we would start at the $7.25 per hour, and it would remain at $7.25 per hour as long as the total between tips and the minimum wage equal $12 or greater. When it was under $12, then the minimum wage would move up according to the scale that's on Senator Eaton's bill, would go to the $7.25 to $7.50 and then $7.75 an hour. So this would set it at $7.25 per hour, take tips into account, and it would be up to $12 an hour. If it's under $12 an hour, then the increase would move.
Okay. Senator Dames has offered the A4 amendment. Senator Eaton, any thoughts on the A4 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would oppose this amendment. This tip credit hurts the very people that the increase in the minimum wage would most benefit. And these jobs are already low-paying, and many of those rely on the tips to pay their basic needs. So I would not support this amendment.
Senator Dames?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for point of clarification, we are setting it at $12, so it is considerably over the minimum wage. And if the total combination was under $12 an hour, it would not come into play. So, you know, I could understand if we were trying to reduce minimum wage, but we're not doing that. We're just stating that if it's under $12, if it's over $12 an hour, they would stay at
$7.25.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having waitressed in my life, I will tell you that tips are between the customer and the waitress or the bartender or whatever. They have nothing to do with the business at hand. It's a tip for the service received. And I don't think that the business has any place in taking that money.
Senator Rood. Senator Rood, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Eaton, you know, it may be between the waitress and the server and the patron, but tips are treated for income for most purposes other than the minimum wage. They pay income tax on it. They pay payroll tax on it. Employers pay Medicare and Social Security and unemployment taxes on the tips. So it's a lot more than just between the server and the patron. That's actual wages, and they do pay all of the
federal or the taxes that anyone else pays on their income. So it's a lot more than just between the server and their patron. These are actually wages.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Eaton.
That is my point exactly, that they are wages, and they're earned by the server by being an exceptional server. And they use this money to enhance their wages to pay for things like college that has gone up considerably. And it's theirs. Sorry.
Senator Root.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Eaton, I make a commission as a real estate agent because I'm an exceptional real estate agent, but I still have to pay taxes on that and Medicare and everything else on there, income tax, payroll taxes, and everything else. So I don't think that their tips should be, as income, should be any different than anyone else.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Eaton.
I was certainly not suggesting that they're not claimed and that the proper taxes weren't paid. I was simply suggesting that the business should not get them. They belong to the server.
Senator Root?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Eaton, how would the business get them?
I don't understand the question.
Senator Root.
Mr. Chair, well, Senator Eaton, you just said that the business would get them. So how would the business get their tips?
I'm trying to read the bill quick here, the amendment. It's voluntary payments. Please. Thank you. I have help.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak to this. My name is Jennifer Schaubach. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. Senator, I just wanted to reiterate that servers do pay Social Security. All their tax, all their tips are reported. They have to be. And taxed, like wages. However, like Senator Eaton said, this is gratuity. If you look up the definition of a tip or gratuity, it is for services rendered. We are not here to sub, those servers are not there to subsidize the business. That's not what those tips are for. Essentially, you're asking servers, business, to subsidize, we're subsidizing the servers' wages on their tips for the business, which we would oppose as well.
Senator Root.
Mr. Chair, could you explain that, how that subsidy works? How they would be subsidizing?
A server's wages right now are as low as their minimum wage. Okay. Now, basically, you're asking servers to take a pay cut to what was the
$7.25.
To $7.20. No. But if, okay, you're asking servers to take a pay cut because of the gratuities that they earn. Technically, correct.
Mr. Terry, would you explain that? Because I don't believe that they're taking any cut. They're getting the same wages. In fact, they're getting credit for up to $12 an hour. So can you explain to me how they're subsidizing the business and how they're taking a cut in pay?
Mr. Chair, Shama. Senator, however, what happens is if they go over that $12 an hour, their minimum hourly wage drops to below the minimum wage. Correct?
No.
Mr. Chair.
Well, it's capped, Mr. Chair, Senator, it's capped at $7.25. And so technically they would not see an increase with everyone else. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. McElroy.
Perhaps I can help. Dan McElroy, on behalf of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. And one fact in background as we begin this discussion, it may be helpful. We completed a survey of restaurant operators in Minnesota, received more than 100 responses, to ask the question, what do our tipped employees earn currently? And the response was that with a combination of their wages and tips, and reported tips on an hourly basis, The average on a statewide basis was a little over $18 an hour, and in the metro area, a little over $22 an hour. We think it's important to take a relatively modest action to help protect those jobs and the ability of our great servers and bartenders and pizza delivery drivers to earn those. This doesn't set any maximum. If a server earns $18 or $20 or $25 an hour, they've earned every penny. They get every penny. But it would recognize that the employer and guests have made that opportunity possible. This is a more creative approach than has been considered in the past when we considered a lower wage for servers. This doesn't do that. We have visited with a wide variety of people and hope that this is seen as a creative way to handle a challenge. It's been a challenge in border communities where we have seen restaurants develop in states like North Dakota and Wisconsin that recognize that tips are part of a tipped employee's income, and that's been challenging in some areas. We worry about these great tipped jobs being replaced by automation if the jobs become diseconomic or less than economic. These restaurants play an important role in their communities. My members would like to continue with table service. But table service as a concept has declined from about 50% of the business in 2007 to about a third of the business today. Part of that's cost. Part of it's speed of service. Part of it is the success of fast casual brands. But this modest recognition of tips as income, I think, would help protect the best-paying jobs in our industry, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Eaton.
I'm wondering if the author of this amendment would please explain the code Title 29, Section 206A1. I don't understand the implications of that.
Mr. Chair, I would ask counsel to explain that.
Okay. Mr. Fuller, can you I think he was busy trying to get another technical amendment. You got it? Okay, Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chair, Senator Eaton. That references to the Fair Labor Standards Act minimum wage in federal law.
What is that? And
Serene.
I'm not familiar exactly with what it says, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chairman, Serene, it says a lot for purposes relevant to this. It sets the federal minimum wage at $7.25 now.
Serene, is that helpful?
Yes.
Further discussion, members, on Senator Dames' A4 amendment. Senator
Mr.
Nelson.
Senator Dames, I'm just curious. So your amendment would state that the wage would be at least minimum wage. No, this amendment would mean that the wage is $12 per hour. Explain this.
Senator Dames.
Senator Nelson, what this amendment would do is it would start at the $7.25 per hour, and then it would take into account the minimum wage plus tips. If it's over $12 an hour, they would stay at the $7.25 per hour for a minimum wage. If it was under $12 an hour, as the minimum wage ratchets up in the bill from $7.25 to $7.50, or $7.75, they would receive that increase as long as a combination between the tips and the minimum wage was under $12, $12 or under.
Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, so the real wage would be at a minimum of $12.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, the real wage would be that if the combination of the minimum wage and the tips equaled that. Now, it could be less than that. If it's less than that, then the minimum wage would be set according to Senate file number 3.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Senator Dames, so what happens if they make wages larger than $12 an hour?
Mr. Chair. Senator Eaton, the minimum wage then would stay at the $7.25.
But they get to keep all their
Keep
money.
All their tips.
Mr. McElroy,
would you help? They would continue to keep the dollars that they earn. So let's say that the combination,
Senator Dames.
Let's say that the combination was $7.20. They used $7.25 an hour, and tips were $7 an hour. their total end would be $14.25 an hour, and that would be their income per hour for the hours that they had that combination.
And
Senator Eaton.
Senator Dames, what would be the benefit to the employer then?
Senator Dames?
I'm not saying that there is a big benefit to the employer other than we would start using if there you'd lock it at 720. The benefit to the employer would be that the minimum wage would be locked in at that 725 versus going to the 750 or the 770.
Ah, that's modest.
There it is.
Senator Eaton, I have not been misrepresenting. So for you to sit there and say, there it is, like the sun just come out,
well,
ma'am, I'm sorry,
it.
But I haven't misled anything in this conversation. I've tried to explain it, and I'm sorry that you didn't follow it. But I'm not misleading anybody in my conversation and how this was going to work. So if this was an aha moment for you, I apologize, but I have not been misleading what I'm trying to accomplish here.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Senator Dames, I apologize if I offended you. I did just get it. That was...
Senator Eaton.
So I guess I would have to continue to oppose this because the people who generally make the least amount of money would be denied the increases in the minimum wage.
Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair and Senator Eaton, I think you have to think of this differently. I know when you first made your comments, you talked about the tip credit and the tip tax, and those are conversations that we did have years ago. We did. I was part of that conversation, so I know that it was quite a long time ago that we've been doing this. But I think we've changed the conversation, and I think you need to think of it in a different way because we are no longer talking about reducing their wages or not giving them as much as the other folks. What we're trying to do here is we've come up with a really good solution to a problem that's been happening in Minnesota for a long time. This is called a tiered system, and we are not taking away their wages. No one is expecting them to make less than the $7.25 that everyone else makes. And in previous years, yes, there was conversations about the tip tax and the tip credit, but we're not doing that here. And so I'm asking you to kind of open your mind and look at it in a broader base. And I think we're looking at a different solution here, and I think this works really well because everyone gets the $7.25. We are not taking away anyone's wages. They will all get the $7.25. And should they be such a good server and serve such excellent wage that they make $12, $15, $30 an hour, we are excited for them. And we are not punishing them in any way. They get the $7.25. What it does for the employers is when they're making these big amounts of money, they stay at the $7.25 helping the businesses to survive. And so I would ask you to look at it in this concept and not back to the old arguments that we had. This is a great solution to move Minnesota forward on this issue.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd just like to also add to what Senator Rood has said, is that, and I understand that we have some small restaurants in rural Minnesota that probably do not receive a combination between minimum wage and tips of $12 an hour. And this is not going to hamper them at all. They're still going to get the minimum wage increases until they would hit the $12 an hour. So it's not like we're saying to the folks that are out in these smaller restaurants that tips are harder to come by and they do a very good job, they work very hard. It's not going to hamper them until we get to the $12 an hour. There's not going to be a change in the minimum wage. So I'd just like to point that out, that it's a tier system and that maybe this is a compromise. It'll work. Maybe it won't. But I think it's something we have to have this conversation on.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, may I respond to Senator? You are affecting wages. You are capping a server's hourly wage at $7.25. So their future earnings cannot go up. You are essentially locking them in. Now, if we asked every business to cap their profits or cap their earnings, how would they feel about that? This is a direct grab into the pockets of hard-working Minnesotans. This argument has been here forever. Every single time there's been a minimum wage increase, businesses cry wolf. Servers work very hard. I, too, was a server and a bartender for years. And the work that you do is not always fun. The people you have to wait on are not always fun. The hours you have to work are not always fun. But some of us actually enjoyed it quite a bit. But there are also times when you're not earning tips. That's something else that hasn't been mentioned here. When you're not on the floor and you're doing what, I guess somebody didn't know what side work was, but side work is actually cleaning and rolling silverware and prepping things for the next day and things like that. You're not on the floor earning tips at that time. And I assure you, there's prep work and after your shift work where you are not earning tips. Servers are also taxed on 8% of their net sales, whether they earn it or not. May I repeat that? The federal government taxes the server's wages at 8%, whether they make them or not. If you have a bad night, you have a bunch of horrible customers that don't want a tip, you are still taxed whether you make those tips or not.
Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, we don't believe this caps, certainly doesn't cap the income of tipped employees, although it does cap the hourly wage. We don't think it constitutes an income cap in the long run because menu prices continue to go up as commodity prices go up. And tips for many, many years have followed the menu prices, and we believe will continue to do so. And we, you know, when Senator Eaton, I think, wisely asked, you know, who benefits the 25 or 50 cent saving, I think the whole kind of community does because it makes it less likely that jobs would be automated with iPad ordering or kiosk ordering or pay at the table. Tipped employees, non-tipped employees, and owners are in this together. And we have, as Senator Root indicated, have had this discussion for a long time. We've worked really hard to have a more creative, more collaborative approach than the old tip credit idea. I have talked to literally hundreds, perhaps thousands, of restaurant owners, managers, investors, servers across the state, and they are legitimately worried about a loss of jobs to things like automation or what's called reconcepting to counter service. This will reduce that threat to really good-paying jobs, and we don't see it as a cap on – certainly isn't a cap on income, and it's a limited change in wages. Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff and then Senator Rudy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and nice to see you, Mr. McElroy. It's
Senator.
Been a while. Thank you, and nice – Ms. Schwabach, thank you for your testimony. And Senator Eaton, this is a tough conversation because it is so highly charged. And I just want to remind people that it became even more highly charged when literally a whole governor's race kind of became unglued over this issue. And I think because of that, you know, all of our – desensitivity to the issue is even more heightened. And so I actually appreciate what's been brought forward today because I think it is a change in the direction of a tip credit where you're not going down in wages to like 460, which I believe the federal government did at, I don't know what their current is. So it is a creative approach, and I think what's important is to have this conversation not in this room but with a broader group so that the servers can actually examine this proposal and talk about it and see the pros and cons. And so I understand Senator Eaton's hesitancy. And, again, I want to really thank her for taking the escalator off the bill. I don't think that people really understand what a big thing that was. The business community really said, and I'm sure Ms. Schwabach does not appreciate that she took the escalator off the bill, but the business community said loud and clear they did not want an inflationary increase on the minimum wage. And so so I appreciate that, and I appreciate being willing to continue this conversation, and I hear her that she's not yet ready to make both compromises in one fell swoop.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Senator Root.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Schwabach, you know, we have had this argument before, but we have not had this solution. And I think this is a really good solution. This is a really good compromise. And, you know, as a former restaurant owner, I do know the back of the house because as a restaurant owner, you're the chief cook, bottle washer, server, bartender, floor washer. So I'm fully aware of what goes on in the back of the house and about tipped employees. So I would ask for your support for this amendment because I think it's a really it's a really good solution to a problem we've been looking at for a long time.
Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we've had some good discussion on this issue. And, you know, I bring this forward in a way that I think that it might help us keep employment in the restaurant industry. I certainly see other avenues coming about if these wages start to escalate on the small margins they operate on. So that's the reason I bring it forward. I think it might be a solution to some of the issues. It's not a tip credit. It's a tiered system. And I think that we have to look at it that way. And I would like to thank Senator Bonhoff for her insight on this. Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Chair.
Senator Eaton.
I would appreciate if the members would oppose this amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion on Senator Dames' A4 amendment?
I call for a roll call, please.
A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Sparks?
No.
Senator Bonhoff?
No.
Senator Dames?
Yes.
Senator Eakin?
No.
Senator Herr?
No.
Senator Coonan?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Rood?
Yes.
Senator Schmidt?
No.
Senator Weber?
Yes.
Members, on a roll call vote, the A4 amendment is not adopted. Four to six.
Thank you.
Members, further amendments or discussion on Senate File 3? Mr. Fuller, would you like to make your technical correction?
Mr. Chair, members,
remember. Mr. Fuller.
On page 1 line 27 of the amendment, before pay, insert, except if eligible to pay the wage under paragraph C. So it would read, starting on line 26, D, notwithstanding paragraph B, a large employer must, beginning August 1st, 2013, except if eligible to pay the wage under paragraph C, pay each employee under the age of 18 wages at a rate of at least $7.25 an hour.
Thank you.
Senator Eaton.
Mr. Chair, I also have a question on 1.20. Do we still want that to be August 1st, 2005?
Mr. Fuller?
Maybe.
I don't have an answer. I mean,
okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's go back to members. Are members comfortable with Mr. Fuller's technical amendment? Okay. Senator Schmidt,
you got it.
You got it. Okay. She's got it. Senator Schmidt moves that oral amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor? Aye. Say aye.
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 On the amendment. I'm sorry. Yeah. Senator Dames, on the technical amendment that Mr. Ford just made. Okay. All those in favor of the technical amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Now we're back working on Senate File 3, the A9 amendment. Further discussion? Senator Hurd.
Senator Spark, I move that we pass this bill.
Okay. Senator Hurd, you ready to go? Senator Herr moves. Senator,
like a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested.
And could we also recorded in the journal.
Recorded in the journal. Okay. Senator Herr moves that Senate File 3, as amended, be recommended to pass. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Sparks?
Aye.
Senator Bonhoff?
Aye.
Senator Dames?
Nay.
Senator Eakin?
Yes.
Senator Herr?
Yes.
Senator Coonan?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Rood?
No.
Senator Schmidt?
Aye.
Senator Weber?
No.
Okay, members, on a roll call vote of 6-4, Senate File 3, as amended, has been recommended to pass and will be moved on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Members. And with that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you very much, members.